Eye on Careers.
In association with Laymoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
This is Eye on Careers. The Career Clinic, charting your next move.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We just heard the interesting story of Mr. Jim Tapper, Managing Partner, Leadership and Talent Consulting Middle East for Korn Ferry International. And he's giving some really interesting advice into, you know, it's not the strongest or fastest species that survives. It's the one that's most adapted to change and the importance of the executive today to have agility. And gave some really interesting ideas on how you can start using this concept. For one is, you know, ask yourself how you're being interpreted, how people are viewing your actions and messaging that you're sending out, and ask for feedback, secondly. And thirdly, he was mentioning the power to act on that feedback, you know, start to react and change your operating style approach in relation to that feedback. And so I thought a lot of this was quite interesting. And, you know, he has been working with some of the top CEOs, top chairmen, top executives all over the world. And these were some of the defining features that when he looked at people who were really operating in the top 1%, they were exhibiting some of these key factors. But if anyone missed that interview, can catch it on our website on DubaiEye1038.com, and all the podcasts are there. So our next guest is a lady who started her own business, chased her dream. She's the founder of MyFarah.com. So if anybody out there is thinking of starting their own business, of starting their own show, if you have a dream, if you feel that you're just not reaching your full potential in your role and you want to break out from the herd and strike your own fire, light your own torch, this is one interview you don't want to miss. So let's hear a little bit more about Zane.
This is Eye on Careers, Executive CV.
Zane Mellis is the founder and CEO of MyFarah.com. Before founding the online wedding resource, she spent over 6 years in equity research at Deutsche Bank in Dubai. The Institutional Investor Survey rated her the number one emerging markets consumer sector analyst. Prior to that, Zane was an equity analyst at Bear Stearns and HSBC in New York City. She has a BA in biology and psychology from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.
Well, welcome to Eye on Careers, Zane.
Hi, Shane. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if you realize this, but our last guest was also a graduate of Georgetown University.
I did notice that.
Did you notice that?
Yep. I don't know if it's a coincidence or...
It's the Georgetown alumni.
Yeah, it's a strong network.
We should ask for some sponsorship dollars from the school, I think, after this. Georgetown, do they have a program out here? Or are they opening have they opened an office in the Middle East?
They have a branch in Qatar, actually, not here in the UAE. So they do have a footprint in the region.
It's so excellent now that, you know, people don't need to leave the Middle East to have access to some of this top executive and business, the educational facilities that are just jumping leaps and bounds. And I don't know, I mean, life for you, do you feel that getting that kind of premium branded education really makes a difference? Because I know there's people out there right now who are thinking, should I go to do my MBA? Should I go back to school? Should I just go to a local university? What's your take on the impact that has on someone's success story?
I definitely think it does have an impact, but it's also what you make of it as an individual. And I think it makes a difference if you, if you go as an MBA, I think as a postgraduate is also different than undergraduate. I think having kind of that branded education from an undergraduate perspective, I think you get a lot of out of it, but mostly in terms of kind of the people around you, the network that you build. I think that applies to an MBA as well. Obviously, a lot of it is the network you build. But yes, you're surrounded by kind of a very strong network. You're surrounded by peers who are very driven, and I think that's the experience. That's what shapes the experience.
I think one of the greatest examples is when you look at the feral child phenomenon, you know, the feral child who's raised by a wolf or raised by dogs or animals, and you can find these stories on the net very easily. You would actually find that that human being starts acting like the animal that's raising them. That is the, you know, that they're actually barking like a dog as a grown adult. And that is the impact of how strong our environment plays on our development. And so all of a sudden, you know, you get the opportunity to go to a school that's very difficult to get into. You're surrounded by juicy IQs. You're surrounded by ambitious people. Your teachers and your guest speakers are all highly successful people. Your environment is going to define you to an extent. Do you feel that, or what impact does that have?
I think, yes, your environment defines you, but you also have, I mean, there's a drawback to that. You don't want to be molded, right? You want to flourish into your own potential. You grow into your own potential as a person. So you are shaped by your environment, and that's a good thing to some extent, but at the same time, you don't want to be molded.
You don't want to be corrupted by the false paradigms of thought that the educational institution has forced upon us.
That's not what I meant. That's taking it a bit to an extreme. Yes, look, you are shaped by your environment. You're surrounded by extremely intelligent people. That helps shape you as a person. But you also, I mean, I think when it comes to, let's say, an MBA, these MBAs, for example, are very structured, and you don't want to, fall into a kind of a structured way of thinking. Sometimes it's good to think outside the box. So you do want to be, surrounded by the right people, but at the same time, you want to kind of flourish into your own kind of potential.
Keep your independence.
Yes,
and
exactly.
What I call MBA-itis, when you come out in many ways, I agree with you that the MBA can destroy the way you think. And, if we look at history, the institutions have persecuted genius time and time again. So it's an interesting concept. But I think, on one hand, you have to be cautious, but I think it's a huge catalyst to your success in life. If you've gone to one of the top schools like Georgetown or Harvard or Princeton, you have that power network. You can pick up the call. Case in point, the guy who just left the studio is one of the world's leading leadership coaches in the world, and he's your alumni.
100%. And, that's what I was saying earlier. It is a network, and it's a brand name that you work with, and that's why you work so hard to get into these schools. But it doesn't mean that you can't make it in life without, going to a Harvard or a similar name. You can still work very hard and achieve what you want to achieve without having that brand name on your CV. So I of course it helps, and I think it's great, and you're surrounded by the right people, and the network really helps down the line in life. But it's not a prerequisite to success.
No, and I think if you're on the other end of the spectrum, you get the gift of desperation. When you're at the bottom of the barrel, you really understand value. I was with Manu Jaswani a few nights ago, and he is the CEO of Shoemart. Mm-hmm. With Landmark, and he, back in the 80s, I think he joined them in 1978, they were sleeping on the floor in a one-bedroom apartment, three guys in one apartment. He's making like 4,000 dirhams a month or less. And for 10 years, he just continues trucking through this. Today, Manu Jaswani sells over 15 million pairs of shoes. He's got 350 stores under him, of course, and Landmark Group is a multi-billion-dollar organization. Huge success story. But, if he wasn't tempered by the fires of his own suffering, seared by that desperation, that was his gift. That's his fire. That's his fuel. That catapulted him to the top.
Absolutely. And I think that's the most important thing. I think you could, education is very important, but I think your own kind of drive and desire to succeed and to be very disciplined about it and kind of to focus and have a certain kind of vision or goal at the end that you're working towards, it is the thing that kind of makes it or breaks it. for an individual.
That drive. I mean, either, you know, I think it doesn't matter if you went to Harvard or you didn't get the opportunity to go to any school at all. Generally, I think that you're not successful because you want to sleep more than you want to be successful. When the morning comes, you're lying there in bed when you should be busting your tail and getting things done. And that's what it really comes down to, don't you think, is that people are lazy.
Absolutely. I personally love to sleep, but but I do agree. I do agree. I mean, no, you do have to work hard. I think to become successful in anything in life, you have to work hard. And I think the people who didn't work hard were probably very lucky. And most of the time, luck doesn't get you there by itself.
You can't compete globally. You can't compete. You can only get to a certain level, and then you enter into a global market, and then you're competing. And if you're not willing to go the distance, you're going to get wiped out.
Yep. And there's also an element of starting off in a smaller environment where you succeed and then moving up the chain into a bigger environment, and then you realize that there are others who are equally capable or even more capable than you, and then you have to adjust your standards and adjust to that environment. And people who aren't able to do that really are the ones who can't kind of make it up the chain. Some people kind of feel very comfortable and it's like the big fish in a small pond kind of scenario where you feel very comfortable in that in that environment, and you never kind of move beyond that. And it's always important to keep challenging yourself and realizing that there's always people out there who can help kind of drive you further, rather than just kind of stagnating and in kind of an environment where you're kind of have this perception that you've already achieved something or have reached the top.
Yeah, and it's that drive, that tenacity. Wouldn't you rate tenacity over passion? Because, people always say passion. I'm not saying passion is not important, but, tenacity, persistence over loving and being passionate about what you do. Or do you think that love and passion supersedes?
No, I think passion is very important, but I think passion can be an obstacle sometimes. So I'll give you an example. As an entrepreneur, when you're very passionate about your business, you're always kind of thinking of new ideas, thinking of new things that you can do with the business. And that can sometimes, you can lose focus when you do that, especially when you start a business in the early stages. You're very focused on you have to be focused on the first kind of version of the product. And when your thoughts are all over the place because of how passionate you are about the idea, it can become a hindrance as well. So in my case, I had to kind of train myself. I was so excited about the business in the early phases, and I had to train myself and whenever I had an idea, I'll write it down and kind of shelf it for a later time so that I'm able to focus on the task at hand, which is, launching the first phase of the product.
Yeah, your website looks great, by the way, farah.com.
Myfarah.com. Thanks a lot.
Even if you're not thinking of getting married, when you look at it, it just looks so exciting. It's beautiful, and it's very, very well done. So hard to find good websites, usually they're too noisy or the branding's off. Like, I'm in executive search, and often you go on an executive search and they have animals, or like there's like, and it's like, what are you, an animal reserve, or you're a search firm? Doesn't make sense, right? But yours is very nicely done, very nicely built.
Thanks a lot. I mean, yeah, there's a preconception that websites are, maybe something easy that you can create, but they're actually not. And like you said, putting something together of that scope when you have multiple products that you're offering can be quite a challenge.
Right. So what were you doing, before you started MyFarah.com?
So before MyFarah, I was at Deutsche Bank. I was an equity research analyst covering the consumer sector here in the Middle East.
And you would just watch golden diamond rings going through the roof. You're like, I need to get into this business.
Well, I covered publicly listed companies like Al Marai, Jarir. I covered equities. I wasn't covering commodities, so gold wasn't something that I looked at, but there were other analysts on the desk who were focused on that. But I was at Deutsche. I was in the equity research sector for 6 years total. Prior to being here in Dubai with Deutsche Bank, I was at Bear Stearns and HSBC in New York. And I also covered the consumer sector at the time.
So a hardcore banker. This is the story of Zayn Malis. She is the founder of MyFarah.com. You can take a look at her website. She's going to be sharing more of her insights on how to start your own business, the challenges she faced, and some of the things to look out for on the road to the top. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what does it take to, you know, get into that top performance mode, to get in that peak performance, to unleash your potential. And for those just joining us, we had Jim Tapper, managing partner of leadership and talent consulting for the Middle East for Korn Ferry International, talking about the power of agility, the power of self-awareness, the importance of understanding it's not so much the message that you're trying to relay to your team, but really how the team is interpreting your message, which is the most important piece. And how these changes are sweeping across the Middle East, and how organizations are now forced to change in the 21st century. And now to complement Jim's stellar performance this evening, we have one of the top entrepreneurs here in the region, one of the founders of MyFarah.com. Her name is Zayn Malis, and she took the leap and left the cozy seats of one of the top banks in the world to cut and blaze her own trail through the jungle of entrepreneurship. Zayn, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for having me again.
Sorry, I'm embarrassing you by hyping me up. She's telling me at the break, stop hyping me up. Because you're a bit uncomfortable. But, you know, I think you deserve it, because it's a huge jump to go out on your own and leave the safety net and say, look, I'm going to start my own thing. You know, right away, there's a huge amount of challenges, a huge amount of uncertainty. But what is the biggest challenge that you've actually faced in starting up this business?
So I would say, I mean, the experience as a whole is a lot more challenging. The emotional kind of pressure involved in being an entrepreneur, you can't really understand that until you're already knee deep into it. You have to be on your feet all the time. You have challenges that come your way on a daily basis. You have to be ready to kind of switch your strategy very quickly, because if something's not working, you can't, you know, you have to be very quick about changing to make it work. And I think, going back to the emotional pressure, I think probably the most challenging part of starting a business is separating your personal success from the success that the business realizes. And as a new entrepreneur, sometimes you tend to take the business very personally. And whenever there's, you know, a setback, or whenever you have some feedback, you kind of reflect it on yourself, and it can take a huge toll on your own self-confidence. And you don't realize that this is something normal, and that, you know, all entrepreneurs go through that. And I found, you know, obviously through speaking to other entrepreneurs, I found that, you know, this is something that everyone goes through, and it's probably one of the biggest challenges. Now, in terms of the platform, in terms of MyFarah specifically, you know, we had many. It's a very large platform. We offer different verticals. We have wedding websites. We have inspiration. We have vendor pages. There's a lot on the website in each vertical.
Inspiration? I mean, these people are in love. I mean, it's sickening. Do they really need more inspiration?
Believe it or not, you need to be more and more inspired when you're talking about a wedding. But yeah, I mean, each vertical had its own challenge, and then putting everything together into kind of a user-friendly website wasn't an easy task. It took us a long time. It was a huge investment on our time in terms of time and resource. It's not easy. And then you also have the typical challenges of a startup. So finding the right talent, structuring the business, stuff like that.
I thought it was interesting that, you know, when you talk about, you know, taking a bit of criticism, and I always pair it akin to, you know, a parade. You know, if you're going to be out in front swinging the baton, you drop that baton, everyone sees and points the finger. No one's going to see the guy in the middle of the band playing the tuba who maybe stumbles a couple feet. So part of, you know, do you think being part of being out front is having a thick skin? Because at the cocktail party or at the soiree, nobody's going to be talking you're the person, oh, did you see what Zane did? She started her own thing, blah, 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 blah. You know, that is inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you need to have a thick skin. But I don't, if we were to use a metaphor, like, I wouldn't say it's the person in the front with their baton. I would say the reason you take it so personally because it's more like a baby. So when someone has a baby and someone, you know, if you insult a mother's baby or say something about a mother's baby not sleeping well or not eating well, the mom gets very,
really?
She takes it very personally.
Not and sleeping well? I thought babies just do that, though. Is that personal?
Oh, I have no
like
idea.
Like, are you responsible for that?
I actually don't
that?
Have kids, but I do know from people around me that, you know, it's really? A similar feeling. It's not because you're up in the front of the business. It's because the business is yours.
So you'd be upset, like, your baby doesn't go into stage 5 REM sleep long enough. And you're like, that's it. You have insulted me.
Yeah, it kind
really?
Of, it's actually it is. It's very much like that.
I didn't know you could not be good at sleeping. I mean, how do you know? You wouldn't even know if you're not good at sleeping. Man, you're just so bad at it. You suck
example.
At sleeping. Like, I didn't know that. I haven't been dreaming lately. I was concerned. I can't remember the last time I had a dream. I suck at sleeping. No, but, I guess it is personal, but isn't that the bedrock of your success? Isn't that the thing that makes you successful is that success is personal?
100%. And the definition of success is very personal, right? And something so personal you get a lot of gratification and satisfaction from it when it comes to life. And so, there's a flip side to all of this, yes. Seeing your vision come to life is a very rewarding feeling. So 100%, yes, the success is very personal.
Is it short-lived, though? Because as, you know, like, for example, if you're a painter and you paint a piece of furniture or something, you know, people say, oh, that looks great. But you, as the person who painted it, know all the spots where the paint ran a little bit or where this part was off. And you're like, it's just never perfect.
No, it's never perfect, and you always want to improve it, but it doesn't mean that you don't feel proud for what you've achieved, right? And it's important to kind of take a step back sometimes and realize that you have achieved something, and it's important to kind of feel proud that you've worked hard and you've created something. I mean, it's healthy to do that.
So how big is MyFarah.com now?
So we launched in February, we've been growing very steadily and very nicely since then. We have over 275 brides actively using our. We have certain tools that you need to sign up for, like wedding websites, checklists, budget tools. So we have quite a bit of brides actively using our tools. We've had over 7,000 brides, browsing the site, looking for inspiration, and this is. Without doing much marketing. We haven't started marketing yet because we're working on getting our vendors on board. We have a section of the website where we feature the region's top vendors, and we started kind of onboarding vendors on an invitation-only basis in February. So we're a new business, but we're kind of growing very quickly at this moment.
Who's we? Do you have partners?
I have an... investors. My husband is kind of obviously he's supported me in this. He's behind the scenes kind of helping me as well. And I have a big team that works on my Farah. I have developers. I have a team of 3 developers. I have copywriters based out of Jordan and Lebanon. I have a team of graphic designers. I mean, there's a big team behind this business.
So it sounds expensive.
Yes, it did take a big initial investment, I think you have to invest in something to kind of see a proper return.
So it's all in for you, right? There's no. Hey, I have another side business on the side. I mean, you're investing a huge amount of your savings into this business.
Absolutely.
It's either going to make or break you.
Yes. it's a risk that I was willing to take. I mean, it's not going to make or break me. Look, I've been through several experiences in the past where I realized that, you can always kind of pick yourself back up even from the bottom and you move on with life. In finance, to give you an example, when I was in Wall Street, I was caught in the first major layoff on Wall Street. And then a month later, I went to Bear Stearns. And then in the month after that, Bear Stearns collapsed.
Wow.
So I had two consecutive layoffs. And, you know, at the time I thought it was the end of the world and I thought it was breaking me literally. But you kind of pick yourself up and you realize that, you know, actually these things don't break you. They just make you stronger. And then you take what you need out of that experience and you move on.
You're like, what is this? This was supposed to be the best job in the world. I made it to Wall Street.
Exactly.
And now...
Except I made it exactly at the right time where the financial crisis had started. So...
Wow.
So, yeah.
Did you come and listen to The Wolf on Wall Street? It was just here.
Yes, I saw that. I saw
with
that.
With ITP, yeah. And did you go to that?
I did not. I didn't go to it, no.
Oh, it was a great event, I think. But it's interesting that the guy's a bit of a crook, isn't he? That people are... But he's not anymore, of course. I mean,
yeah,
he did his time. He paid his price,
he's reformed.
Clean now.
He's reformed.
Yes,
so.
He's reformed. But what an interesting story. We're slightly digressing, but so I think part of it is really that tenacity. And you know, do you think that's really critical to be successful? That you have to be all in, fully committed. You know, is that one of the things, ingredients you think you know other people may be missing? Is that you're not 100% committed?
Yes, I 100% believe that you have to be committed. You have to, you know, put yourself all in into your business. You have to be willing to spend the time. You can never be successful if you don't put, you know, if you don't kind of put time into something. We spent almost a year and a half building this website. So I think it's very important to kind of invest in something to make it successful. And I think you have to differentiate yourself. So you have to, in parallel to investing in something, you have to be different. You have to be offering something that's slightly different than what others are offering. And I think that's something that a lot of people kind of don't focus on. They see maybe a business model that's super successful and they say, hey, let's jump on. Instead of thinking, well, what else can we do that's not available?
I always question this because, you know, the schools, the MBA schools, I mean, they love preaching about innovation and how you have to be innovative. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to be something different. But, you know, I contest the opposite. Like, if you look at the amount of money that's being generated in the economy, 95% of that money is in traditional things. You know, you go to the grocery store, you want a steak, you don't want ostrich. You know, you go out for a meal, you want a hamburger and fries. You don't want something, you know, weird thing you've never had before. You know, and on the flip side, you know, something as simple as a tailor, you know, I can't get a good tailor, you know, get a good haircut or a place who just cuts your hair properly. You know, isn't it just doing the basics really, really good that breeds success?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not, I think that's not what I meant by innovating. I'm not saying, you know, start something crazy. I'm saying try to find a gap in the market rather than kind of jumping onto the trend that you see is already kind of working for someone. So that's, you know, that's what I meant by innovation. And going back to what they teach you at an MBA, I mean, I don't want to MBA bash too much. But
let's do it. Let's MBA bash.
But I had a venture capital investor once tell me that he would never invest in a business that has more than two MBAs on its management team. So
really,
yes. So
because you know what, and I let me guess why, and then you can tell us why. But I think it's because sometimes you can become so analytical that you can forget about passion, and you're so headstrong that you're no longer heart strong. And I say, like, forget your business plan. Where's your heart plan? You know, like, where's the love of what you're doing? What's the real value there? And the MBA-itis guy or lady is like, well, you know, this segment of the market doesn't have any blue widgets. And if we had blue widgets, then we could sell, you know.
Exactly.
Is that it? Did I get it
well,
right?
I also think it's about being a mixture. You need a balance of being strategic and tactical. And when you're kind of very academic about it, you're focused so much on the strategy that you're not so tactical, right? So, and it's very important to have a balance. And I think that's when sometimes, and we were saying this earlier, is sometimes you go to these big name schools and the risk is being kind of boxed in and confined, and you don't want to be boxed in. You want to kind of grow into your own potential and think for yourself.
Is strategy overrated? Zane will be answering that question in just a minute. Zane Malas, she is the founder of MyFarrah.com, one of the leading wedding websites here in the Arab world. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Zane Amalis, the founder of MyFarah.com, talking about how she started her own business and the challenges she went through. But Zane, Zane, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks a lot.
And just before you took the jump into becoming an entrepreneur, I believe, did you have a manager that was trying to kneecap you? And, you know, how do you deal with that? Because so many people go into work and their manager actually does not want them to blossom, does not want them to supersede them or to outshine them. And when you are identified as being a high potential or you know, a bright spark, sometimes the organization tries to purge you. You saw this in that TV series Survivor, right? The first person voted off the Survivor team is the most competent person.
Yeah, I mean, I had that in the past. It wasn't just before I left to become an entrepreneur. The timing wasn't it wasn't then, but I did in the past at one point have a manager who reminded me on a daily basis that I was underqualified and that I should have never gotten the job in the first place.
Ouch, that's mean.
Yeah.
And that's not confidence inspiring.
Absolutely. And I was the most junior person at the time on the team, but I was taking on a senior role for the first time. And so, you know, I was starting off from a self-confidence perspective. I was already starting off kind of from a low point, and this didn't help. And it really got in the way of my work and my performance in the organization. Now, I was lucky enough at the time because people in the team started to notice what's going on, and they encouraged me to speak to management about it. Which is probably something I probably should have done on my own initiative. So I spoke to management and I, you know, basically started reporting into another manager. And, you know, the difference in my performance was incredible. So I really do think that, you know, the relationship between a manager and a, you know, more junior kind of employee is very important, because there's sometimes people are still developing within an organization sometimes, and relationships like that can really kind of influence their development.
So sometimes you can bring visibility to the issue if you're having a manager who's trying to destroy you, which often is the case. Another option is to work on a project that's so big it involves different departments. So managers, because you basically asked for, you know, you brought visibility and they gave you a different line manager to mm-hmm. report into. But if you create a project that's so big that it spills across departments, you automatically get visibility to different managers and you start to become more visible higher up the food chain.
100%. And once people start realizing that you are a kind of a performer in the organization, then your problem is solved, right? So yes, you need the visibility.
And you can't, so for anyone out there who's going through this, you cannot fall to this manager who is tormenting you and trying to destroy you. You have to bring visibility to the fact that you are a top performer by any means necessary. And that means getting larger than your role. That means taking initiative. That means going beyond the borders and scope of what you've been given. When you were just talking about strategy and tactics, and a lot of people, you know, obviously if you're a strategy consultant or you're one of these individuals with MBA-itis, you may place a huge value on strategy. And on the other side of the coin, you know, you have, especially here in this region, you have a lot of very successful Eastern entrepreneurs who are tactically, they are amazing tactically. You know, these guys go from basically almost not having shoes to shipping in 3,000 tons of goods into a region. It's unbelievable what they do tactically and how they maintain their cost position so low. They maximize their margins and they're so concentrated on just optimizing the deal that's on their table right now. Where do you weigh in strategy versus tactics?
I think it depends. First of all, it depends on the market. I think in a mature market, you need to be more strategic. In a less mature market, you can kind of be tactical without being so strategic, and I think you can still succeed. I also think a successful organization needs a bit of both, like I was saying earlier. But as an individual, you can get away with being one or the other, as long as someone within the management team of your organization, you know, is complementing you with kind of the other skill sets, whether it's strategy or being tactical. So I think, you know,
I love how you just did that, how you look at the macro and micro versions, because, you know, as an executive search professional, if we're assessing someone and you look for that strategic skill set, and then the guy says, well, I'm not in a strategic role. I said, well, no, even when you're 1 year, you know, you're just starting, are you being strategic with your own career? Are you being strategic about how you're developing yourself? Are you being strategic about how you're managing yourself?
Right, 100%.
So yes. It's so interesting how you distinguish those two.
Yeah, and I think, I think an approach that relies purely on strategy doesn't work as well as an approach that is more tactical. So I do have a bias, but it depends on the situation.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, I read an interesting quote. It says, the world rewards action, not thought. Of course, you can't have great action without great thoughts, but it's obviously the precursor. And then the flip side of that, they say, well, you know, men of action are mere tools of men of thought. So we go back and forth on this debate.
Yeah, and I think a lot of time is wasted these days on too much strategy and too much thought. And when you're kind of part of it, working in a lean, kind of smaller organization, you tend to just kind of, yes, you have strategy, but you also kind of need to focus your time and resource a lot of the time on you know, the action, as you say.
Yeah, well, I always wonder if, you know, when you look at East meets West, is, you know, as we head into the 21st century, is the Eastern businessman actually better suited for the challenges of the 21st century? Because their model is almost, here's an idea, let's throw it into the market. And if it doesn't work, let's tear it down and rebuild it, or let's adjust it on the fly. And, you know, the Western style is more, let's do the assessment, let's do the feasibility study, let's look at our product concept, proof of concept. Okay, now we have a strategy, let's roll it out. And now the market's changing so fast that almost wipes out your old school strategic process is got to be obsolete.
Yeah, in certain industries, like obviously the technology space, startup ecosystem now, I mean, you have that culture now. But then some industries are very developed and very globalized, and you can't have that mentality, I mean, because there's large players and you need to kind of compete on that level. So you need to be very strategic and you need to have a proof of concept, etc., to be able to compete with these very large organizations. So let's say, as an example, the food and beverage sector, you know, there's a few global players that are very big, and to be able to compete with them, you have to have a solid strategy. You can't just go in and say, hey, let me test this out and kind of do it the lean way.
Yeah, well, I was just speaking with one of the local CEOs here in the region, and we were arguing about this, that, you know, he was saying that it's much more difficult to become wealthy now, mm-hmm. because you have this consolidation of power, this consolidation of resources, like you said, in food and beverage. You know, you need to be fully integrated across the value chain to be successful, and then hundred millions, if not in some cases even billions of dollars to do so, versus back in the day. You could have a small, you know, a production crew, and you could go to the market and turn a profit. On the flip side, you know, I would say it's easier to create wealth today because at the click of the mouse, I can have my product in 50 countries. So where do you fall? Is it easier to acquire wealth today than it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, or is it more difficult now?
It's actually a very hard question because...
I was just saying that. I kind of put you on the spot there. Sorry
yeah,
about
and
that.
No, because I use on the one hand, you see people in kind of bloggers who are creating wealth by just, you know, I'm not saying anything, but you blog and you can make a very lucrative career out of that.
By getting sponsorship for your blog and.
Exactly. So on the one hand, it's become much easier for an individual to create wealth as an individual.
You don't have to leave your house.
Yes.
You don't even have to leave your house. You can get everything.
Yeah.
And in Dubai, the best thing is you can have everything delivered.
Exactly. But then as an organization, I think it's become more difficult. So it's a difficult question. I think it depends which perspective you're coming from.
So so you're seeing this. So what the prediction is then is you're going to see this bipolarization of these mega corporations, which are going to consolidate. We're going to see that consolidation. And then on the other side of the coin, one of the predictions is that we're going to see the emergence of the mega entrepreneur, the individual who's running a global business virtually with, you know, 20 or 30 really strong thought leaders who are niche specialists in their field, and they'll be generating a huge multi-million dollar income.
And that's what's driving people to become entrepreneurs, and I think, and that's why there's been, you know, a boom in the startup kind of industry in the past couple of years, because it's easier as an individual kind of to create wealth. Meanwhile, these big companies are having a harder time to doing that. So I think people are deciding, well, hey, maybe it's time to kind of take a risk and move towards kind of the individual model.
Yeah, I read a stat that said 36% of all Fortune 500 employees will become entrepreneurs within the next 5 years, and that they're basically exactly doing what you had just described.
Yeah, I mean, based on the trend in the past couple of years, that's definitely where it's heading.
You're one of those.
I'm trying.
I was, because you were saying it like you weren't part of it. You're
I
believe that could
I'm
be a
trying.
Trend. I'm like, as Voltaire says, no snowflake in an avalanche feels responsible. But now, as you move forward, what are some of the other? Do you have any kind of North Stars or business principles that are really driving your business, driving the culture of your business that you really look to?
Yes, we, again, differentiating yourself, that's very big for us. On a kind of a business person, you know, on a personal level, it's also, you know, trusting your gut instinct. A lot of times, again, going back to being tactical, I think it's very important to trust your gut sometimes in a business environment. I think also not taking yourself too seriously, I think, is very important in a business environment. I think there's a lot of people who make that mistake, and that kind of not only gets in their way, but it gets in the way of people around them. And of course, being confident is very important, but then there's something to be said about self-criticism. I think a little bit of self-criticism goes a long way, and it helps someone improve themselves and their company and their product. And I think, you know, kind of being introspective and setting your own benchmarks for yourself as a company or as an individual is super important.
These are interesting concepts, but when you apply them in a group setting, it becomes more difficult, you know, whereas you're actually encouraging your staff to, you know, not be afraid to fail, you know, when you trust your gut. Or where does failure fit into that equation? We'll be hearing your answer to that in just a minute. This is Zayn Malis, the founder of MyFarah.com. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're looking at what does it take to start your own business? What are the real criteria? And also, so what are some of the big trends that we're seeing in the market today? You know, where one report actually said 36% of Fortune 500 employees will be leaving the institutional environment to start their own business. Well, live for you, we've captured one of these individuals for you live here on Eye on Careers. Her name is Zayn Malis, and she's the founder of MyFarah.com. She fled the institutional walls of Deutsche Bank, but I guess she didn't really fled. She was chasing her dream. Either way, she was running. But Zayn, please welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is an interesting concept. And just before we took a break, we were looking at, you know, what are the kind of principles that you want that are driving you, and then how do you institutionalize those into your business? And is there some challenges going from really the concept into the reality of embedding these into your organization?
Yes, there are challenges, and I think it depends on you know, the talent that you hire. And I think so, you know, we were talking about trusting your gut, or, you know, taking a risk in a business environment. That can be tricky, right? Especially as an institution. But you do need to hire kind of a talent that you trust and are able to kind of follow that mantra as well, because if you're not able to do that, you're going to end up micromanaging the entire business. And for a business to scale, obviously you can't micromanage. You need to be able to kind of instill the same principles in the people that work around you. You to be able to work as a team and not kind of top to down structure.
Yeah, yeah. And when you look at it though, and I'm not saying your company's like this, but you know, on one hand they say, oh yeah, let's have teamwork. We want to have teamwork, but then they reward individual performance. So the incentives are you know, and they say, oh, well, there's a team incentive, but really the big large part of your bonus is based on how you perform as an individual. And or they say, you know, let's get innovation going, but you know, they reward people for following tradition and they penalize them for making mistakes. You know, a lot of the whole infrastructure around what organizations have built is counterintuitive or paradoxical towards what they're actually preaching or striving for. So
absolutely. So that's something that needs to be changed in those organizations. So as you know, obviously as a startup, we don't kind of have that issue yet because we are a small company. And I do think that, you know, maybe I'm being idealistic or maybe I'm being naive, but I do think that, you know, you at least strive to have that kind of environment, work environment.
Right. Now that we move into the 21st century, then, you know, one of the new strong plot points within the corporate narrative is risk. And I'm just curious, as a small business, is there a risk dialogue taking place within your organization, or is that a dialogue that's saved for later chapters of your story?
No, as a small business, risk is very much a dialogue that you have on a daily basis. But that's something that, I mean, you go into starting a business knowing that it's a risky venture, right? You know that up front. And you have your chances of failure are very high. And your chances of failure at it, you know, are, you know, again, as I was saying earlier, you need to be able to change your strategy, because if something doesn't work, it doesn't mean it's the end all of your business. It just means you need to evolve and adjust to whatever you find is working.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you know as a small business owner, you are unearthing your revenue stream. So sometimes maybe when you go in, you think your main revenue stream is X, and as you develop, you realize X is really not that profitable. But all of a sudden, we're making money doing Y, which you didn't even think of. Is that true? Oh, is that a reality?
Absolutely, that happened to us. I mean, between a concept phase and then implementation phase, we realized that the revenue stream, which we thought would be our smallest, was in fact our largest.
Which one is that? Or?
So we have a few revenue streams. Our vendors pay us an annual membership fee to be part of the site, and that's become our largest revenue stream.
Wow. Well, and so you thought that would just be a side dish.
Main course. We also have a few others which are kind of in development as well. So I think it's also a matter of which products we rolled out first.
Right. Interesting. But you know, nobody can come on the show without being asked the famous question: what is the secret to your success? And you know, when you look at, you know, all the roles you've had and all the experience you've had, what do you really think are the key tenets of a success story, or really what do you really hold most dear to being some of the reasons that are some of the main thrusts to your ability to succeed, your ability to walk through the crisis in Wall Street as banks fell and crumbled before you, to walk and change continents and then change industries, to walk the challenging path of the entrepreneur? So, you know, we have to ask you this question.
Ion Careers reveals the secrets to success.
So I have to ask you, what, Zane, is your secret to success?
Well, I think a lot of it is basically putting your head down and really just focusing on your work and taking the best out of a situation, whether it's a good or a bad one. I think the best thing you can do to be successful is to really be focused, to have a vision, and to work towards it.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
Yeah, there was a pessimistic strategist and a optimistic strategist, you know, both arguing over whether the glass was half full or half empty, and the tactical guy came up and drank it. So, you know, and I don't know if that was what you were talking about. It was, you know, just get on with it and keep moving forward.
Absolutely. You just get on with it and you learn from your failures and life moves on. And then that's the best way to succeed. And as I was saying, success is very much how you define it. So if you're fulfilled, then, and if you feel that you've met your own kind of goals and benchmarks in life, then you've succeeded.
Yeah. So in there, I think what you're talking about, you know, is having a personal definition of success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is success? Success is what it is to you.
Yes.
For you, it's, you know, building this website. To someone else, it may be getting their baby to sleep properly. It all depends on what your success is.
And it's all a fair definition of success. And unfortunately, these days, people are spending too much time looking outwards instead of inwards to kind of define success.
Yeah, I heard an interesting quote said, we borrow money we don't have to buy things we don't need to create opinions of ourselves with people who we don't care about.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's like what's happening in the world today, right?
So, yeah, and social media is making it even worse, I think. So
driving it to the edge.
Yeah.
So do you think that's one of the key things is be true to yourself, find out your DNA, what makes you unique, what's your unique value, what's your unique contribution going to be?
Yes, and put your head down and keep going at it.
Keep plowing forward.
Keep plowing forward, exactly.
What's your final piece of advice for anyone out there who wants to start their own business or find more success in their life?
I would say, I mean, be prepared for, again, a rocky road and don't get discouraged.
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite quotes for this week is, you know, you're not successful not because you don't have the talent or you didn't get the right education or you don't have the right connections. You're not successful because you want to sleep more than you want to be successful. And right now, you know, as we head into the weekend, you know, you're going to find there's going to be people out there who are more interested in going to the beach than working on their dream.
Oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with going to the beach on the weekend. So
really?
I think people need to also get some sort of balance in life. And I think this whole kind of mentality that you need to work 24 hours a day is probably a bit too much. I think
too much?
You can be successful and achieve a balance at the same time.
But you only go for like what? Couple 1 hour to the beach or
I don't
how
go
much
to the,
time
I don't go to the beach
I know,
but there's nothing wrong with
you. You don't,
there's
you don't
nothing wrong with going to the beach
but you don't but you'll be working
absolutely not I don't go to the beach
so you'll be working
so
you're like
yes.
You're like confused you're like trying to get your competition to go to the beach and you're like well they're there I should be working but you'll be working.
I mean,
admit it, you're working through the weekend. You'll be working this weekend.
Partly, yes.
There you go.
But there's nothing wrong with the people who want to sleep and go to the beach on the weekend. Honestly, because coming from an industry where you have a lot of face time and I don't believe in that. I think you can work smart rather than work hard, as they say. You know.
So you appreciate a good tan.
Yes, for other, with a lot of sunblock.
So okay, so well, thank you so much, Zane. We'll be looking forward to watching your business blossom, and thanks for taking the time to share your experiences. Everything from fighting through a financial crisis to, you know, getting laid off from one bank to join another, only to watch it crumble to the ground, and then having the courage to actually quit your job once you've found a beachhead, once you've got some solid footing, to throw it all away, throw it away, and chase your dream and get out there and feel the wind in your face.
Yep. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll have you on again sometime soon. So that's the story of Zane Malice, founder of MyFarah.com. It's truly a stunning website. So especially if you're about to tie the knot, you may want to go check it out. And that's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. I hope you found one or two tidbits, or as my friend Jack Montgomery likes to say, golden nuggets to help you on your road to success. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and this is this episode of Eye on Careers.